Well, welcome back to Three Putt Par. My name is Mike Caridi. I'm your host. This is episode number 36. And for the second time, we are live from New York City. It's my second last day here, as you can hear from my voice. It's been a solid couple of weeks on tour. I'm ready to go home. I'm pretty tired, but it's been a great week. And the US has turned it on. We got an earthquake. In about an hour and a half, we're going to get a solar eclipse. It's just all bells and whistles for Mike on tour, which is just great. It's just great to see them putting it all on for me, which I really do appreciate. It is obviously difficult doing this stuff on the road, but I do appreciate it. And I do appreciate you guys and girls listening. So, I do want to keep knocking these out. And I do have a guest for us this week. I will be adding that little interview with DB from the Tour Junkies podcast at the end of this. I'll quickly run through some stuff for the Masters this week because it's Masters week. I'd say it's probably the biggest week in golf for the year. I mean, the Open Championship's obviously probably alongside it, but if it's not the biggest, it's the second biggest week of the year. So we want to talk a bit about the Masters. I'll give you the rundown on what I'm thinking, and then I've got a really great interview with DB, so please make sure you give it a listen and give those guys, the Tour Junkies, a follow because they've been doing this for a very, very long time, and they're very good at it. And he's just a plethora of knowledge, especially when it comes to Augusta, because both DB and Pat both grew up in Augusta. DB, as he talks about, caddied at Augusta for a couple of years while he was at university. So, yeah, it's a really, really good chat. So please hang on for that. Before we do get to the Masters, though, we will have a really quick chat about the Valero Texas Open last week. It was obviously won by Mr. Akshay Bhatia. We're very happy about that because he was our number one pick last week. So on the podcast, I called him out at about 50-1, which is what he was trading at that time. When the actual email went out, he was a number one pick and he sat at $67 is what he got on Betfair. So it's probably a little bit more than that, maybe closer to 70 if you did have a bet on. I did get a couple of messages from people back home that had won some money, which great. Congratulations. Really, really appreciate the thanks. In particular, one who's told me they're taking me out for dinner when I get back to the Flower Drum. So I've been a Flower Drum in a very long time. So I will be making sure they earn it. I'll be drinking as much as I can. So really appreciate that from that listener as well. But yes, Bhatia was on top. He really did well. He from go to woe, right? He led from start to finish, obviously had an exceptional round one. He went out in the afternoon, which I probably was expecting not to be the time to score. And then sort of did really well. And I don't think he was ever super, super threatened until McCarthy on that final day, final back nine. I mean, McCarthy just literally lit it up. Obviously 9 under in the final round is never a bad score. But when you got a final round of, the final back nine, I should say, what did he shoot? He was like 6 or 7 under at one point on the back nine alone. That's going to obviously shoot you well and truly into contention. But it's also one of those things that you tend to see happen a lot where a player goes deep, but at some point it always falls apart. And I think the really difficult part for him was he did all the hard work to get into that playoff with Bhatia, and then it just fell apart on the first playoff hole. So all the good stuff that he'd done all day just capitulated by putting one or two in the water and, pretty much leaving it for Bhatia to just make I think he had a 5 or 6 footer for birdie. He didn't need to make birdie on the playoff hole. He was always going to win. So that was great. Congratulations to him. A special place to him, as you've seen through the socials, I'm sure, where it's a place where he's met his current fiancée. It was not certainly in the models of why I picked him, but, yeah, I just thought there was something there that I saw when I was following him around for a little while over in Houston. I could see him playing well, and that's one of the reasons why he was right at the top of those numbers. On to this week, it is the Masters. It's probably one of those ones where it's difficult for me to give you the rundown on what you need to know. You all know it. I mean, everyone that's listening in Australia is going to be up at 4 o'clock in the morning watching. If you're overseas or if you're in the States, obviously, you are going to be watching it at much, much more social time than where you have to watch it at. Or if you're Matt Molica from Australian Golfing Passport, he will be there. So make sure you keep an eye on Matt's socials because he'll be over there. But for anyone who wants to pretend that they don't know anything about Augusta National, it isn't Augusta, Georgia. It is called, the locals call it the National. So when you hear DB in the upcoming little chat we have in a moment, they always just refer to it as the National. Just under 7,000 meters, first major of the year. Everyone's here. except Taylor Gooch. So that obviously, as we've always discussed and everyone always discusses, there'll be an asterisk when the winner is announced and that jacket's given out and the trophy, because, you know, Taylor Gooch isn't there, and that's probably, you know, he's a yardstick of golf in world terms, let's be honest. And what else can I tell you that you don't already know? We'll all be sitting there watching Amen Corner. We'll be wanting to watch as much golf as we can over the next 4 days. I'd be a little bit concerned about the weather on Thursday. It is looking a little bit ugly. Thunderstorms. It gets very, very muggy and hot down there. So I would say it's going to be a little bit uncomfortable. I wouldn't be shocked if those thunderstorms get out when they're kind of predicted. I wouldn't be shocked to see not much play at all on Thursday, but hopefully it comes through the day earlier. Might wash out the par three tournament, but if nothing else, they'll still get it done. Obviously, there's not going to be any concerns about a 3 day tournament or anything like that. And the weather looks pretty good for the rest of the week. If we look at last year, John Rahm took advantage of Brooks Koepka's collapse. I mean, Brooks was exceptional all week last year. He looked like he was going to run away with it. Final round, Rahm shot that four under. He won by four. He shot three under in the final round. Brooks went three over. So the six shot swing is going to not do your chances of winning any help at all. And I mean, if you think back last year, Brooks could have won this comfortably, and then he went out and won the PGA. So he could have had two in his pocket, you know, two from two. That would have been an amazing going into the US Open, but he didn't quite get that done. Obviously, all the main players are back. All the key players in the world, and anyone that's won, it's back. Tiger's back. I know no one expects to see anything special. It'd be great to see him make the cut. You never say never with Tiger. I think we've all learned that before. I don't think anyone's got any massive thoughts that he might actually go out and win it. But again, I was there in 2019, so I'm not going to say it's impossible, because I've seen the impossible happen before. The stats that I'm looking at, I really want to be ball striking it well. 150 to 200 yards into the greens. These guys are obviously hitting it way longer than the course has ever been set up to hit. But undulating fairways, side slope lies, a whole bunch of different things that are playing to it. But the biggest thing you need to make sure is when you're hitting into these greens, you're hitting it into the right spots. Because if you don't, the ball will just funnel away from the pin. That is absolutely the key here. So have a good week with the putter, but make sure those irons are hitting where you need to be. So the pins will be tucked into spots where they know that they can punish people that aren't accurate with the irons. And on top of that, you need to be able to scramble. You need to be able to be great around the green. Off the tee is great, obviously. You don't need to be super long. It doesn't hurt, but it's not one of those things. It really is just about hitting that iron to exactly where you need to on the greens, and then having a great week with the flat stick. We go through the odds. Scotty Scheffler, $4.90 is your favorite. That is, I mean, I'm pretty sure Tiger started some majors at sharper than that, but that's very, 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 very short. Rory McIlroy, 12.30. John Rahm, 13.20. Xander, 17. Brooks, 25. Hideki, 23. Spieth, 25. Wyndham Clark, 42. Ludvig Åberg, 36. Neiman, 32. Zalatoris, 46. Hovland, 44. And Cantlay, 53. Anyone else there that most people are remotely caring about? Maybe Cameron Smith. Cameron Smith, 58. DJ, one of the other live golfers, sitting there at 58 as well. It is a really, really tough one to line up if I look at who I like. Realistically, I always talk about live golf and PGA Tour golf when it comes to betting, and when they come together, they're in the majors, very similar to something like a horse racing event, like for Australians, like say the Melbourne Cup. You get horses that come in from Japan. We know they're great horses, but they've definitely never raced against these horses that we have in Australia, or they haven't raced against them recently. So lining up how they're going versus how the Australians are going is really hard. It's the same here. So if I want to look at all my data for the PGA Tour, I can see Scotty Scheffler's the best player in the world. Now, John Rahm's an exceptional player. I know he's probably not far behind him. Have I got anything that lines those up together? Have they been playing each other recently? No, not at all. Well, I can tell you that John Rahm hasn't been playing exceptional on the LIV Tour, but does that mean Harold Varner III's playing better than him? It's just very, very, very difficult. So what I've done is I've done my normal process. I've pulled in all those stats. I've pulled in all the things that I want to see. And then on top of that, I've basically got the LIV guys that I remotely think could be a chance, and then filtered those guys towards the top. So No shock to anybody. Scottie Scheffler comes out on top. He ranks across the board my number one pick. He's obviously playing very well. He's won a green jacket before. We know he plays well. Here he's played. He's 10th. I think his last four starts, he's finished no worse than 19th. So the price is short, but if you want to bet on him, go crazy. I mean, he'll be in the picks, but I mean, it's hard not to have him in the picks. And one of the reasons why he's going to be shorter is we have a limited field. So limited field, less players, obviously means he's going to be, those odds aren't going to be there either. Siwoo Kim comes up number two, and this is just in the data. So this is just in the numbers that I'm pulling in. So things like scrambling, he ranks 25th on tour, 18th in around the green, 5th in bogey avoidance, something that I really want to see someone managing that side of their game. And when it comes to his approach play on the distances that I'm looking at, he's still sitting in that top 50, 60. So all that stacks up very, very well for him as well. Hasn't had any exceptional results here, but again, it's not, it is somewhere if you played well, great. But at the same time, if you haven't necessarily played exceptional here, as long as you've had some runs on the board here, I'm probably more comfortable. And he finished 6th at the Players Siwoo and 17th at Houston. So he has got some form coming in. Next one I put down is John Rahm. I mean, how do you not have him in? He's obviously won here last year. He's had a handful of top 10s outside of that. I mean, he clearly loves playing here. And I don't care what his form looks like or what sort of visibility we have of it on the live tour, it makes it very difficult not to put him in, even though you can't really line him up too well. And next one down is Hideki Matsuyama. I think he'll be a lot of people's picks this week. I don't love picking him, as I've talked about in weeks gone by, but his form here is good. His form coming in is good. I mean, 6th at the Players, 7th at Valero last week. Didn't really do too much wrong last week, but didn't exert himself super either. Probably had that one good third round last week to bring himself right back into it. Just finding form at the right time. I think he's someone that everyone will be pretty keen to see. And the next two down the board, I'm not going to go in depth on, but Xander Schauffele and Brooks Koepka. I mean, Xander's in there for his obvious PGA Tour stats. He's had some great results here. Never seems to find a way to close. A second and a third here historically is never bad form. And then Brooks, I mean, the guys, if he's not going to be in your picks for results driven guy for the majors for the rest of this year, then you're not looking at golf. He gets out of bed for them. So good luck to him. I think he'll have a really good week as well. Players like Neiman, Cam Smith, maybe Dustin Johnson off the Live Tour. I'd probably rank Neiman the best of those. Cam Smith's had some exceptional results here, obviously. But I don't know that I've seen him playing. I don't watch a lot of live golf. I don't watch any live golf, but haven't heard that he's been playing exceptional golf. And again, I don't have the stats to show that he's finding form with anything spectacular, but obviously Neiman's won a couple of times and has played well here. So I'd probably put him on top. That's it. If you want someone from absolutely out of the clouds, I mean, you could go back to someone like, I don't know, maybe Akshay Bhatia has another good week. Not sure. Whoever it's going to be, they're going to have to hit their irons well. I'll put it all out in the email. And if you do want the email, it's 3puttpodcast@gmail.com. Please make sure that you put in your picks for the tipping competition, the one and done on Teepster. It is up. The prizes are there. The last winner got a 7 Mile Beach head cover. And I've replaced that in the kitty with a prize kitty with a Tara Edie baseball cap. So if you do get the win this week, you are able to pick from the kitty, pick any of those prizes that you want, and I'll send that out to you wherever you are in the world. That's it for me. Please hang on, listen to DB. It's a really good chat, some great stories about his time in Augusta and working at the course. Please, if you are having a bet, make sure you gamble responsibly, and don't forget to put your tips in for this week's event. Cheers.
Welcome back to Three Putt Par. It is Masters Week, and we have got a special guest on this week. It is David Barnett, DB from the Tour Junkies. DB, welcome.
How are we doing, Caridi? Good to be on here, man. I appreciate the opportunity. I love my Aussie brethren, so I'm looking forward to this.
Mate, it was the perfect guest to get on. We talked about it last time we had you on to preview the Ryder Cup, and we talked about getting you on for the Masters. And I should say, post that Ryder Cup catch-up, you couldn't have been more correct, because we were talking about you know, giving us a deep dive into the US team. And I remember you talking to the fact that you'd caught the European price at a really good price, thinking that it was too good to be true. And yeah, you were right.
Yeah. I mean, it's not hard to be that accurate on that when we haven't won over there in 30 years. But yeah, I think I hit it at 2-1, and then I got it again at like plus 160. So we just kept firing, and here we are. But hopefully things go differently next year.
Yeah, that's it. Next year is it Quail Hollow, I think, next year?
No, next year it's at Bethpage.
Oh, Bethpage, that's right. I did go in the ballot. So if I get tickets, I will definitely be going, or I will be going the ballot as soon as it opens. I was going to pass on the President's Cup this year in Canada.
Don't blame you.
Yeah. but the reason we got you on was to talk Masters because, as some of the listeners definitely know, because they do listen to the Tour Junkies, you live in Augusta.
Yep. Been here all my life, born and raised.
Born and raised. And before we skip past the important, get onto the important part of Augusta. So Tour Junkies, I will keep mentioning, is obviously the podcast that's been around now for, what was it, 7 years, 8 years?
Nah, man, we started in 2015. Our first episode dropped September of 2015. So we're going on year nine.
Year nine, wow. I still remember, I think I told this story the last time. I'm pretty sure I found you guys listening when you started having back and forth with Stephen Bowditch. So that would have been a long, long time ago.
Well, our first run-in with Bowdo was in 2016. So we had just started, and it was because Pat was really making fun of how poorly he'd been playing. And we didn't know anybody listened, much less Bowdo. But so Bowdo DM'd us and made a quippy comment about about his poor play in great form. And one thing led to another, and we had him on the show, and we made Pat do a formal apology. He wrote a heartfelt apology to Bowdo. We put it to Boyz II Men background music, and it was a very legendary moment in the podcast history there.
It was. I do remember that. That was it. Because I reckon you must have been having that conversation with him over Twitter, and that's maybe where I sort of, maybe I was following Bowdo or something like that. I don't remember what it was, but it was great. It was the first podcast that I'd ever listened to. Now, you guys talk to DFS, so Daily Fantasy Sports. We don't really play that in Australia. It's very small. We do bet. We do gamble legally across the country. So it was great because you had all the same insights talking to betting and having an insight into golf. But it was the same information, just talking a different language and what you were going to outlay, which was great.
Yeah, man. Now we've definitely evolved into more betting. I mean, I enjoy the betting stuff more. And I think, I think it's just more, I think the betting thing is more fun. Like, we can all win together. We can all try to, bend over our bookies together. And whereas DFS is, you're kind of, you're giving people insider intel to possibly beat you in DFS as you're competing against each other. So I enjoy the betting side much more. And hopefully Georgia can legalize things here in the next year or two.
Yeah, I was saying to that to someone not long ago, it's very different in Australia. We have one effective governing body across the country. The Australian government has approved betting, decades ago. So we've been able to bet on golf. I've been able to bet on golf legally since I was 18 years old.
Yeah.
We're talking, nearly 30 years. So it's a different thing that we've gone through, I think, in betting and getting an understanding of the impacts. And I feel like you guys are just getting there now. And I think things like Shohei Ohtani is the story coming through and people insider knowledge and what can happen with it. And big money coming in means there's always going to be something bad coming out the other side of time, sadly.
Yeah, I'm already kind of growing weary of all the freakouts on the Ohtani stuff and all, pundits writing articles across every sport they cover and, full freakout mode and how gambling's going to ruin the game. I'm so tired. Like, we'll have issues. Every sport will have issues. It is what it is. But for the most part, it's just so stupid. I don't know. If they take away my betting, I'm moving to Australia.
I think they won't take it away. They'll just do what they do here, and that is, you'll get someone will get some inside knowledge on Harris English shooting the line at 71.5, and he will be on the final green and four putts for a 72, and someone had $100,000 on it, and all of a sudden the agencies want to have a big review into it. Now, when the agencies have the inside knowledge on what's going to happen, that's a whole other story. They're happy to take your money. Yeah. But if you're going to take money off them, that's a big problem.
True, true.
Now, so Augusta, what's it like living in Augusta? I mean, for the Australians listening, we know it as the place we get up to watch it probably 4 o'clock in the morning in that time in April where it's very dark in Melbourne. It's the middle of the night and there's a very, very green golf course on my screen. What's it like growing up there?
Augusta's a great place, man. I mean, I think it kind of gets a bad rap. I mean, another thing that irritates me is media that come here once a week. They don't go further than 5 miles outside the radius of the National, and they write some article about what a, you know, dump Augusta may be, or you know, it's just not true. Augusta is a pretty big place. It's the second largest city in Georgia to Atlanta. A lot of people don't think that's true. But it's got, you know, it's a great place for families. It's a great place to grow up. The cost of living is fantastic. Your dollar goes far. There's a lot of good people. There's diversity in Augusta. We've got a huge medical community, big military base, Fort Gordon, which is the head of cyber and national security for the entire U.S. government. So, the U.S. military. So that brings in a lot of people. And again, the medical community brings in a lot of people. So it's a pretty cool spot. It's a diverse spot, but you know, it's not super fast paced like a big city, but there are still options. It's not as rural as some may think, and it's not as ratchet as a lot of golf writers would make you think, based on some of their Masters articles. You know, Augusta National sits in the heart of it, and there are some places around there that are kind of, you know, ratchet. And it's the older section of Augusta as the city's grown and as the suburbs around it have grown. Everything's obviously moved out from there. So it's not a fully accurate picture of what it is to be here, but it's a great place. And I, you know, I do love it during Masters week. A lot of people, some Augustans don't, you know, that's why they get the heck out of town, but I love it. I love to see the city kind of turn on and turn up and change, and people get excited about it, and businesses, and I mean, literally, it affects everything. It's a huge thing for our economy. All of our schools, spring break is during the Masters, so that people can rent their houses and get out of town or do whatever. So I love to get amongst it, as you know. I mean, you've been here, and we've hung out together Masters week. I like to get in it and hang out with different folks from all over the world, and obviously go to the tournament.
Yeah. I think you're right. It was an amazing place to be. Just not forgetting the golf course for a minute. Just the actual town itself was great fun. I know everyone ends up just going to Hooters and all the stock standard things that everyone does when they go to the Masters. But yeah, I was lucky enough to hang out with yourself and your partner in crime, Pat. So Pat's the other co-host of the Tour Junkies at Augusta Country Club next door, up there on the patio, and had some drinks, which was really, really, really fun. I can imagine that being a place that I'd pretty much spend every night out if I lived in Augusta.
Yeah, that's a hopping spot for sure. I love being there. Champions Retreat, which is where I'm a member, down the street a little bit, about 20 minutes down from Augusta National. They've got a great vibe at night. They light the range up and they bring out a band or DJ, and there's a bar, and you know, hit balls into the night till, you know, 11 or 12 every night, Masters week. And there's obviously a lot of people hanging out there. Gary Player stays out there, so he's always walking around making people do push-ups or, you know, show them their swing or whatever. So, yeah, there's a lot of, you know, better places to hang out than just everybody's like, oh, let's go to Hooters on Washington Road, see John Daly. And then they look around, they're like, this place is kind of a dump. And I don't know. The rumor is Hooters is that particular Hooters, which is a famous Hooters, is I think being bought. And I was driving by. I've driven by it a lot lately because, but I was driving by it the other day. It's looking rough. Normally, you know, leading up to Masters, you can start to tell all these businesses that are nearby are starting to ramp up. Right, they're landscaping, their signage, everything's getting an improvement. They're they're all doing their major improvements before Masters. And I don't know, that place is looking rough. It'll be interesting to see what happens with it this year.
And yeah, it's, as you said, it's literally just down the road as from the National, as you call it. We call, still call it Augusta, but the National. Is it as we all know it as the place that no one can play and no one can get to on it? I know that you've played there, and we will talk about that. But on a percentage, if you're a mad golfer and you live in Augusta, what's the chances you've ever had an invite to play there?
Pretty low. Still pretty low.
Yeah.
Unless you're, I mean, more than likely to get an invite from a member to play there.
Yeah.
You're a one percenter living in Augusta, more than likely. So you're either, you know, you're a member at Augusta Country Club or maybe Champions. Augusta Country Club's a little more Augusta National speed, but it's tough to get an invite from an actual member. There are, you know, local members, and Augusta National makes a point to retain local membership. So obviously it's not the majority of their membership, but they keep a percentage. They're constantly, you know, as older local members die out, they're bringing in new ones. So there are some local guys who, you know, who you might get the invite from.
Yeah. It's certainly something everyone dreams about, just assuming that they can get once they go there. I know a little while ago, some friends of ours, his wife wanted to get him a 40th birthday present and put a note out to just his mates in Melbourne saying, hey, ask the husband what he wants for his 40th. And he said he'd love to go to the Masters, but I thought it might be really good to get him a game there. Does anyone have contact? So look, I don't want to be rude, but that's not happening.
Yeah. As we say in the South, we would say to her, bless your heart.
Exactly. Now you have played there. What is the way that you got on to play, or have they played there a couple of times?
The easiest way to get on, if you are not a mover and shaker in the world, is to either volunteer for the tournament or become a caddy or get a job there. So in college in 2007 and 2008, I caddied there part time. And while I was finishing up school, and so if you caddy there and you get in a certain amount of loops for the year, you qualify to show up on caddy day, which is the one day a year you have the ability to play, rain or shine. Now both years I was there, we had great weather. I don't know if there was a formal policy on like if it was literally hailing or whatever, and there was no possible way anyone could play, if they would reschedule or not. I don't think it was a given that would be the case, but luckily I was there on two good years weather wise and you get caddy day, you get to play the entire day. At least this is how it was when I was there. I can't believe it's like 17 years ago, but it's one day a year, and they fire you off in foursomes with a cart, and it is the first group goes off probably before sunrise. I mean, it is like almost still kind of dark, and then you can play until you can't see your ball anymore. So it's in May. So it's, you know, a good 12 to 14 hours of daylight, and you just go until you can't go anymore, and you just keep lapping. So,
yeah.
It's an incredible day for sure.
And the course itself, we've all seen it on TV. Favorite holes for you, or things that just you, that the people can't see on TV, that you'd say this is something you want to watch out for?
Everybody loves 16. I do like, if I'm watching the tournament, I like sitting on the grandstands by the tee box on 16. It's one of my favorite places to hang out. There's a nice little spot there between the, on the right side of two green, where you can kind of watch approach shots into two, watch them finish on two, and then just turn around and you're right there just off of three tee box. And you can see, you know, are they going to hit driver here and try to get as close as they can? Or are they going to, so that's kind of a spot that I enjoy watching. Aiming corners, fun to watch. 13 is a lot of fun. I like hanging out there. 14 is similar to that 2 and 3 spot, where if you hang out to the left side of 14 green, you can watch the approach and then finish out on 14, turn right back around, and just literally turn your body and watch him hit the tee shot on 15. So yeah, I mean, they're all great spots.
Yeah.
I like to kind of walk around and see it all when I go, even now. I mean, I go every year and I still do that.
We stood about, I don't know, maybe 150, 200 yards or same in meters, give or take, from the green on 13 and on in 2019. So as everyone knows the stories, there's no television screen, so we knew from the
Yeah.
white scoreboard just on the side there that I think Molinari was leading, and we heard people groaning, and then we heard half a cheer, and we didn't know what that meant because we couldn't see who was hitting off 12. And then we saw a ball splash, so we knew one was in the water, and we saw one on the green. And it was only until we saw literally Tiger on the bridge in the distance and the other two go under the drop zone that we started to calculate, hang on a minute, something's going on here. And then we watched them come through in front of us and made birdie, Tiger made birdie there on 13. Then we ducked around the back of the side of 15 green just to the right side of 16. So sort of like watched him, I think, made birdie there as well. And then ran around the back of the grandstand, or didn't run, he's not allowed to run. We quickly walked around the back of the grandstand and stood under the canopy of the trees on the right side of 16. So we could see him teeing off. He lose it in the air and then just waited for it to hit the green. And as soon as it hit the green, it started to roll towards the hole. Yeah, it's fair to say the place went into meltdown. And yeah, the rest is literally history.
That's one of the most fun things about going on a tournament round is like not having your phone, not having screens everywhere, manual scoreboards, so they're not updating automatically, and there is a little bit of the unknown. Like you're out there, kind of, you feel like a, you're it's like, I don't know, it's just a throwback to how golf used to be enjoyed, and you don't have everything at your fingertips, and it's a little bit, there's some anticipation in the air, there's something to it. I mean, comparable to your story, and I won't tell the details of it, but I was sitting on the ropes pin high. I was able to, I had an inside job to get me a chair as close to the flag on 18 green on Sunday in 05. There was not a patron on site that could sit closer to that flag on 18 than I could. And I sat down around 2 o'clock to start watching the groups come in and be there for the final. And that was the year Tiger hit that shot on 16 that stopped on the lip and dripped in. And we had all seen you're sitting there and you see the score go up on 15. You see a score go up on 15. So okay, he's done on 15. He's on 16 tee. And having been there every year, you also start to learn like what a roar is. Is that a birdie roar? Is that an eagle roar? Is that a Tiger roar? What is that? And so after we see the number go up on 15, knowing he's on the tee box, and then you hear what I've never heard at any golf tournament since or prior to that day, the loudest, most insane roar ever. And everybody on 18 green is just buzzing, like thinking, oh my God, Tiger ace 16. That was bigger than even like Tiger sticking it close. That was bigger than Tiger making some putt for birdie. It was the loudest thing I've ever heard at Augusta National. And then you just wait. And you're guessing, and then they just throw up the two, and you're like, "What? That was a birdie roar?" Like, and then you don't get to know about it until you get home.
That's what I was going to say. That's the hardest, well, not the hardest part, but that was the part that was the most interesting for us, was because you just don't think about it, right? Because every tournament you've ever been to, you can see everything, where your phone's in your pocket. Metal detectors, there's no phones, right? So you're not getting a phone in, so no one think you're going to be able to be any different. And yeah, day one we went there was the Friday, and it's like, okay, I'm going to go home and watch SportsCenter and see what happened in the golf, because I've got no idea. Like, I'm going to watch all the highlights. Like, I was at that tournament. I got no idea what happened outside of what I saw with my own two eyes, which is a very, very different way to consume an event. When it comes to merch, the merch is obviously something that people go crazy for when they get there. Do you still go crazy every year?
No, I know it sounds ridiculous, and I sound like a very privileged golf snob here, but like, so I'll go on the Saturday before to the women's amateur. So we always get tickets for that as a member of Champions because they give us the final round, and that is now the day to go and shop because the full shop is available. And it's way less people. So, you know, every year since ANWA has been established, so for the last 4 years or however long it's been, I've got to do all the shopping on Saturday, which is great. But like, I might buy one thing for myself, and then you're buying something else for other people, maybe more so. I just don't like once you go every year and you have. There's only so many things I need a Masters logo on. So unless there's something just crazy that I really, really want. I don't really go nuts, unfortunately.
I was very fortunate, obviously, to go and spent some solid money there when I went 2019. But it was must have been the 2020 was the one, or was it 2020 or 2021 where they didn't have obviously anyone on site due to COVID. And I don't know why, but I got given the link from Augusta, basically saying as a patron of recent years, here's a link to a store, online store, and I could buy whatever I wanted and they would ship it. So I went crazy. All the shit that I just couldn't, like I would love to get a gnome. I'm not carrying a gnome back to Australia. I bought a gnome. There's a gnome, there's a garden. I don't even have a garden, BB. Like there's a garden gnome sitting in my cupboard just literally one day to set up in the office to just sit there. Like all the things that you could have got. I wish I could do that every year. But I think it's kind of nice.
2020 was different, dude. I'm like I went ham that year too because, I mean, it's likely. I mean, I know we never thought it would happen, but like it's likely the only time it's ever not in April. You know, it's the only time we're ever going to see a November Master. So, I know a bunch of people, including myself, who got that link or who didn't get that link, and were calling anybody they knew that did, and being like, please God, get me anything that says 2020 Masters on it, or, you know, anything that has, like, I have a poster that has the painting, like, from, and it's got fall colors, and that year was definitely different. I mean, I blew the wad that year as well, buddy.
That's good to hear.
Yeah, but that was the last time that probably happened.
Now, putting you on the spot, before, I know you've got some other meetings to go to today, any stories that you've got that people that you think that wouldn't have heard from Augusta before that you find interesting, or stuff that you've ever been a part of that you sit there and go, that's a story that not many people know that they would love.
I mean, if you listen to us, like you've heard the story. I've been on maybe a handful of other podcasts and told the story. I caddied for, you know, some cool people in that time. I caddied for Will Ferrell. That was at Augusta Country Club, actually, during Masters Week, which is an incredible story that I don't have time to tell you, but we can do that again. I caddied for Scotty Cameron for the weekend leading up to Masters. I happened to land him on like a Friday, and we had a great day. He requested me the next day, so I got him again on Saturday. We had a great weekend, and I thought that maybe he would be like, hey man, give me your address and I'll send you a putter. And he never did, but he was super nice. He was super nice. And, we had a good time. He was a nice guy. And, so I caddied for some cool people, but I would say like on site at Augusta, the hands down, the most memorable experience I had was caddying in Arnold Palmer's group. And, I think it was 2008. And, I lucked into the bag or into the group by chance. It was very serendipitous. And I just remember I find out that morning, I walk outside the caddy house. I call my dad. Dad, you're not going to believe this. I'm caddying in Arnold Palmer's group today, you know, and he's like freaking out. My mom's freaking out. And, we tee off, and he was playing with some friends of his from Latrobe, Pennsylvania. And this was 08. So he was really starting to not be able to hit it like at all really well, you know? And dude, I just remember being like number five. I'm like walking down five fairway ahead of the players, and talking to the lead caddy who was on Arnold's bag, and just being like very aware that he was talking so down to himself. Like every shot he's like, God dang it, Arnie, you know, he's mad at himself. He's like pissy about it. And like, and it wasn't in like a obnoxious way. It was just like, you know, he's been so good at this for so long, and now I'm watching age finally catch up to him. And it almost felt like he was embarrassed. Then he was playing with buddies, and I'm like, I'm walking down five fairway, and I'm like, why is Arnold Palmer doing this? Like, he should not feel embarrassed by any of us. Like, what? I don't even understand. But it was he's so competitive. And he was so competitive within himself that it just bothered him. It bothered him that he would say things like, oh, I used to be able to hit that shot I wanted, or that club I could hit further. And I can't even believe I can't reach this bunker. I can't believe it took me three shots to get to this green. Like, he would say these things and it all day. And it's just like crazy. Now, he was super nice. He was a gentleman. He was very kind. He was kind to his friends. He was kind to us. And the whole day, I'm just like in awe that I'm even walking Augusta National with him, but also in awe that I'm watching him like suffer almost like through the round of golf. And his friends were really nice. The guy that I had was super nice. And but near the end, I had been caddying at Augusta already for almost a year and a half. And I knew it wasn't going to be my long term thing. And I had never been in trouble at Augusta, and I didn't want to be in trouble at Augusta. But I also knew I wasn't going to be there forever. And I told the lead caddy, I said, listen, you know, there was a strict rule at Augusta. You never ask for an autograph. You don't ask for anything. If you did, you were gone. There was no warning. You're gone. I looked at the lead caddy on the back nine. I was like, if there is any chance that Arnold Palmer would sign anything or take a picture, like, I don't care if I lose my job. Like, I just, if there's any way. And he's like, I'll talk to him, you know, we'll figure something. I'll talk to him and see what he thinks. And we're walking down 17 fairway. They were only playing the big course. They weren't playing the par three or anything. We're walking down 17 fairway. And he's like, hey, Arnie said he would sign a scorecard for each of you, and he would take one picture. So the four of you and the four of us in one picture with him on 18T. And so I have the picture. I'm standing right next to, I got right next to him, you know, and I have a scorecard signed. And then the last thing that happened is on 18, he hit his second shot into the fairway bunker, hit his third shot just short right of the green, and his caddy's raking. And he was like deep into that big fairway bunker. So he was going to be raking for a while. So I pick up Arnie's bag and I start walking, you know, walking up to, I got two bags. I'm walking him up to his ball. I put his bag down in front of his ball, right in front of the green. And, you know, I have like a tag on the side of my hat that's got my name and my caddy number on it. And I see him, like, he's standing over the ball. He's kind of waggling. He looks up at me, like looks around to the side of my hat to see my name. And he goes, David. I said, yes, sir, Mr. Palmer. He said, you know what I'm going to do after this? I said, what's that? He said, I don't know if you know, but there's a sweet young girl in there that gives a great massage. I'm going to have a sandwich, a great drink, and I think I'm going to let her give me a massage. And I said, Mr. Palmer, that sounds amazing. And he hit a little bump and run up there and two putted, and that was the end. I never saw him again, but it was a fantastic day.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I don't know, you got to go, but one last question for you, just to give people an understanding. Tickets. There's a question I get asked, how did you get tickets? Obviously, I went in the ballot, but do you want to give us a quick rundown on your knowledge on ticketing, best ways or easiest ways?
Dude, there. I tell you what, man. It is disappointing, especially as a local, to see the deterioration of like local access to the tournament. I mean, when I was younger, it was not difficult at all to get a ticket. Before I was born, like, my dad literally said he remembers in like the 80s somebody coming to his door and asking him if he would like to be on the list for badges every year, that it was a $30 a year expense or something. And my dad was like, F that. Like, I don't watch golf. Like, no. Which we're all like, oh my God.
And so for the people to understand, so there's There's effectively badges which get handed down. So if you have them, you have them. Is that right?
Yeah, you have them for life, and then if you die, you can leave them to your spouse, but you get them every year. And so, like, had my dad said yes to that, we would have had badges every year since that year, and would still have them. And then if something happened to him, my mom would have them. Anyway. We're not bitter about that. So there's those, and then there's the individual tickets that everybody's putting in the ballot for. You get one or the other, or you don't get any, is what happens to most people. But it used to be so much easier for tickets to be had. But it's sad that the Masters has turned more and more corporate. It is as classic of an event that they are, from the lack of scoreboards or digital scoreboards or phones, or it's like, man, you guys keep it so old school and down to earth in every other way, like, but it's so corporate. They're building more high level hospitality. Berkman's Place passes, and now there's a new one that's even now above Berkman's Place, like the new level boss called, I think the new hospitality is called Flag and Map and Flag, which is what they call the logo, is the map and flag. So now that's another level of super elite hospitality. And it just seems as though, as the years go by, they're giving less and less tickets to just regular people. It's harder and harder to win them. But I will say, if I always tell people, if you get to Augusta, if you're present that week, you will likely have an opportunity to get a ticket. Now, will it be cheap? No, it will not be cheap. But tickets do come available, and I say this too, like, a lot of times those tickets may be on a Saturday or Sunday, which people go, what? Who would give up a ticket on Saturday and Sunday? Well, here's what happened. You got a bunch of rich, out of shape, fat, drunk dudes that come here on Tuesday or Wednesday. They play golf a couple times, which they're not used to doing. They're not used to playing golf twice a week. Their back's killing them. They go out to the golf course. They drink too much. They eat too much. They drink too much at night. They stay up too late. They walk that hard golf course for a couple of days. And by Saturday or Sunday, because they all have these sweet ass hospitality setups outside the gate, they sit there and go, I could go out to the tournament and walk more and hurt more, and get more sunburned and whatever, or I could sit
You
here in this sweet hot,
still have to come out and watch the highlights.
I could have 1,000 TVs in front of me. I could be waited on. I could have all the drinks I want, all the food I want, not get sunburned, not get hurt. Maybe I'll just do that. And so tickets do kind of pop up at random on Saturday and Sunday, but you just have to be here. You have to be ready to get them. Other than that, man, other than the ballot, and other than just paying us a ridiculous fee, being scout, paying for the scout tickets or whatever, which is dangerous to do, because the Masters tracks that stuff. They buy tickets, and then they, or they, if they see tickets are sold, they'll come get your butt, like, and you'll be blacklisted. So it's a dangerous game to play, but I don't know, man. It's getting harder and harder. I hate to tell your audience, but that is what it is.
Yeah, I think most of the guys and girls that are going to go over from Australia would normally do it on a tour, or they've got tickets in the ballots. I know a friend of the show, Matt Mollica, who's heading over next week. I think he leaves. He's got tickets in the ballot to, I think, Tuesday. So he's heading over. He's going to try and get a ticket maybe to the one, maybe Wednesday, one other day. And he's going to go play Tree Farm and do what all the other guys do and make the most of the trip and then travel back. So I think that's probably what the most people would do. See, the ballot is the best option if you can get tickets.
I'll be out there Tuesday. I will say, like, Tuesday is one of my favorite days to go. I think that Tuesday is an underrated day. Everybody's out there, everybody's practicing. You'll see everybody. It's laid back. They're skipping balls on 16. Full pro shop, full shop access. I love going on Tuesdays. I don't like going on Wednesday. I think the par three is quite overrated. And they shut the big course down by 1 o'clock. I mean, by 1 o'clock, you can't walk on the course. So if you're trying to see the actual golf course, you have to be there super early, walk around. The par three is just, it's a spectacle, but you're jammed up in there. Tuesday's a great day to go. And then obviously tournament days are fun too.
Yeah, we did Wednesday, but we went straight out to the big course, took a lot of photos. That's the other thing. So you can't take cameras, no photos, unless you were there on a practice day or the Wednesday. So we did that. Then went over to the par three, wandered around. It was, like you said, pretty stuffed in, and it was fine. It was just wandering around, having a look. It was just a beautiful course. I think this is a question we talked about a lot when we were there. It's probably not as easy. It's an easier answer for you, but might not be the same. We said, would you rather play the big course once or have a membership to the par three course, but you can never, ever play the big course?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. Oh, my God.
Imagine coming on site, drive down Magnolia Lane, and then you can only play the par three. Then you got to go
now,
again.
Now, okay, now if that also includes, like, I can eat in there, like I have all other member privileges.
Yeah, but come on, you're sitting there in the clubhouse and all the other members are like, hey, there's DB. He's the par three member.
Dude, I mean, for me, since I've already played the course, I'm taking the par three deal, but that is a really tough. I like that scenario. I might even steal that. That's a good steal scenario.
Steal it. I'll say this.
Throw out some prayers for me. I'm going to try something on Tuesday when I go. My wife got hit with an Instagram ad, and I'm going to give them a free shout out here. I think it's called Camp Snap or something. It is a camera that is a digital camera that looks identical to the old disposable cameras that you like wind. Oh,
yeah. Yep.
You can bring disposable cameras to practice rounds at Augusta.
Yep.
You cannot bring digital cameras, but you can bring disposable cameras. I brought one last year. I have this ridiculous photo of, you know, I'm a huge Siwoo Kim fan. Siwoo saw me and he comes up to me on the ropes on 17. And I said, let's take a selfie. And I pull out this, you know, $9 wind up digital disposable camera. And he's laughing at me and I take this picture. Well, of course the picture is terrible. Like half my face is cut off because you can't see anything. But anyway, I found this, my wife found this digital camera that looks like a disposable. So I ordered one and I'm going to see if I can get it through on Tuesday and get some actual good pictures out there. We'll see how it goes.
I love it. DB, good luck with that. Best wishes to you and Pat. Anyone who hasn't listened to the Tour Junkies should definitely be listening, especially in the coming weeks into Augusta, because I know you're going to have really good content coming up. Thanks again so much for your time, mate. I really, really appreciate it.
Thanks, Caridi. Enjoyed it. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, mate.